CougarFan.com, Rising Shot Podcast. I'm holding my breath for some reason, so...
Yeah, I thought, is he going down? What's going on over here?
I'm winded. Episode 413.
We've got to pipe it down!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. So, Matt, let's talk more sodas.
I can talk about that all day.
So our opening comes from Preston Paris. That's at @Paris_Preston on Twitter. I see what he did there with his handle. He just reversed the name.
Very clever. With the underscore.
With the underscore. Very underappreciated is the underscore.
We all know I'm a fan of the underscore.
I love the underscore. Underscore is great. All right. He said, I haven't made it all the way through the last podcast. I don't know how to take that, Preston. But hopefully, since we put this as the beginning, you'll hear this part.
Enough for you? Haven't we already covered that you can turn up the speed a little bit if you need to?
1.5x, man. It's the only way to go. Otherwise, we sound like we're drunk neighbor guy.
We're awesome on slow-mo.
Or we sit there and we talk really fast like this, and then, you know, I love BYU sports. All right. He says, last podcast, so if you've already done this, I will get there. What are the top 5 caffeinated sodas besides Dr. Pepper?
And I'm with him. I'm with him up until now.
Okay. And then he says, number one is Pepsi. So that's his number one. Matt, what's your number one caffeinated? It's Diet Mountain Dew, right?
Can I just say something real quick?
Sure.
Most painful words in the English language, do you know what they are? Like the absolute most terrible thing that anybody could say to another human being.
We only have Pepsi?
Is Pepsi okay? And do you know what the answer is? The answer is no. Pepsi's not okay. See, I'm not okay.
I don't have your hatred for Pepsi. I have a hatred for all diet sodas or
I don't
zero
have a hatred
sodas.
For Pepsi. I just don't like things that don't taste good.
Okay. So get off of Preston's love of Pepsi.
Get off your high horse, you soda aficionado.
Yeah, that's right. What are your top caffeinated sodas? So it has to have caffeine in it.
So I may not like Pepsi, but I sure love drinking a soda that looks like battery acid. Diet Mountain Dew it is.
Yeah, mine that's non-Dr. Pepper is just straight up Coke. That would be my number two after Dr. Pepper.
I've got an easy number two.
What's that?
Cherry Coke Zero.
Okay. All right. That's good for you. My number two in at least this portion is probably Mountain Dew out of caffeinated ones. Regular old Mountain Dew. Oh, no. Code Orange. The orange one. Is that Code Orange? Or is it Orange Blast or Live Wire Orange?
Code Orange. Wasn't that like a Live Wire Orange? I feel like these are also episodes of 24.
Yeah, I think it's Livewire Orange. I think it's Livewire.
For sure.
So, what else you got? Do you like any other caffeinated sodas?
Diet Barks.
Yeah, I'm not a Barks fan.
Barks fights back.
The Barks just isn't good.
You think Barks just bites.
I think Pepsi.
Come on, man! This is gold. I'm calling out gold here.
They're not gold, Jerry. That Ovaltine, it's gold. I don't know. I think Pepsi might be in my top five if you take out the non-caffeinated beverages.
I like Coke and Diet Coke. I'm drinking all these artificially sweetened sodas. Like I drink the diet sodas.
Cherry Pepsi, it's pretty good. Mm. They had that for a while.
Okay. Well, remember Pepsi Clear?
Yeah.
Were you around for that? Or were you on your mission when that was a thing?
Was I? I did my mission in the States, dude. I would still have known about it. I didn't go to friggin' Ukraine like you.
Okay. On your mission.
I mean, jeez. The when they redid the original Star Wars trilogy and remastered them and butchered them with terrible special effects, that was during my mission. So they all came out in the theater again, which stunk. But I knew all about it because I was in the States, right? Taco Bell had, Star Wars cups or whatever.
I remember one New Year's Eve growing up where we would go to First Night in Boston every year, right? This big New Year's Eve celebration. And one night, one year, the big sponsor was Pepsi Clear. They were handing that stuff out. They're just handing it out.
Yep. Okay. And that's about the only stuff that was drank out for Pepsi Clear, right? It's the stuff they handed out.
I think so. It was all I ever had.
Pepsi Clear. Let's see. Pepsi when did Clear. That come out?
Weird.
It was from early 90s, 92 to 94, with brief re-release in the 2010s.
That seems like a mistake.
No, that was Crystal Pepsi. Is that what you're thinking of?
Oh, whatever it was called. It was Clear.
Yeah. It was, yeah, it was looked like Sprite, but was flavored like a cola.
Yeah, Crystal Pepsi. I see that now.
Crystal
yeah.
Pepsi.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Moving on.
You get real crazy. You go back to like Jolt.
Jolt was terrible. It tasted like
it wasn't even that good.
Water. All right. It's time to jump into the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
So M. Shane McDougald, that's at McDougald Shane. I see what he did there too. He reversed it as well.
Yeah, it's like a reverse layup.
Yeah. He says, how much fun was the match? Brady looked pathetic and human until he holed on the seventh. Do you want more or less of these type of golfing events? Less. I'm sorry, did I say that so fast?
Listen, it had Tom Brady in it, and I still didn't watch it.
I don't care. I don't want to see famous people golf who aren't golfers.
I don't
want to see the golfers golf.
I already don't watch golf on television. Do you know what makes it even less interesting? Non-professionals golfing.
Yeah, I don't know. It's fine, and I think 6 million people watched it because there's no other sports.
There's just nothing on TV. And we've watched all of the things.
Tom and Peyton, right? So it's got some appeal to some people. And this time of year, quite frankly, it still probably would have done pretty well. Right, because, that's not true. We'd be in the middle of playoffs for the NBA and the NHL right now.
Yeah.
So
we're not quite in that. We're not in the dead spot right now.
Yeah, we're not in the dead spot. Huh. Well, how about this? NBA and the NHL. Yeah, we're in the worst dead spot in the history of sports. NBA and the NHL, they may not finish till September.
That's crazy. But do you understand what the fall's going to be like if all of the sports go at the same time?
And you've got the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup in September as college football and the NFL are starting?
People think the productivity at the workplace is low right now with everybody working from home. You just wait till all of the sports are on.
Yeah.
It's going to be a mess.
Well, the NHL released their plan, right? They're going to basically kind of start the playoffs. When they resume. And the NBA it sounds like they're going to do something similar, but something different, right? Like you're going to have like World Cup style group play and then, tournament. To me, that if you're going to do something this year, don't just mimic, hey, let's play a little bit more of the season. You know what I mean? It's not going to work. Anyway, all right. So we don't care about golf, clearly, Shane. Sorry. But I'm glad he enjoyed it.
So am I. I'm glad he had something fun to watch.
That's right. So next up is Sweeney.
Sweeney!
That's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. He says, other athletes you would want a 10-part documentary on. Williams sisters, Tiger, Messi, and of course, the BYU/Indy/Big 12 drama of the last 10 years would be fascinating. Hashtag tweetbag. Matt, if you could pick one sports subject to have a 10-part docu-series on, what would you pick?
I would do the stretch of time in Red Sox history from 1986 or 87 until they won that first World Series in the string.
2004.
Yeah, but I don't know if I'd go 2004, maybe a couple, I don't know, maybe I might even go past 2004, but I would do a history of the Red Sox in that stretch.
I would watch that. I would watch that. I don't want a 10-part documentary on Tom Brady in the middle of his career. I know they're doing something. I don't know if it's 10 parts, but I find those things weird.
It's hard to write the story when, like, the story's not over yet. I mean, what if he goes on? What if he goes to Tampa Bay and wins 3 Super Bowls?
I'll throw up in my mouth repeatedly.
But what? Right, but why are we starting to tell this story now is really my point.
Right, and what if he blows out his knee in the second game with Tampa and never plays again?
Or plays in Tampa for a year and then goes and plays in Carolina for 5.
Yeah, I mean, 5.
That's now the story.
Oh my gosh, 5. Dude, he's 40.
He's a man.
He's playing 40. When he's 45.
He thinks he is.
Well, almost every professional athlete thinks they will be. Ask Peyton Manning how that worked out. Or Joe Montana. Not so great. Not so Touché. Great. I love Tom Terrific. He's the GOAT. But eventually, Father Time comes for us all. Did I get kind of Jim Nance on you there?
Yeah, that was a little weird.
By the way, how is Frank Caliendo just owning the pandemic? He's just owning it, right?
Yeah, he's doing a good job.
He's doing a good job. Nice job, Frank Caliendo. All right. Next one comes from Gary Payne. That's at FastBreakGP. I like waited there like you have a sound effect for Gary.
I still feel like I need one for Gary. We just don't have one yet.
Whoosh. Like Fast Break. Whoosh. No? You hate all my ideas. Thoughts on
the Sweeney one I've really just stolen from a guy I knew in high school. His last name was Sweeney, and we used to make that sound. I mean, that's just, it's stolen.
Yeah, it's stolen. But no, it's not stolen. It's recycled.
Yes, there you go.
Recycled. Makes it sound more, green, you know.
I've revived it.
You've revived it. There you go.
You've revitalized it.
All right. Thoughts on the very active involvement of BYU in the basketball transfer portal. Strong, right? Sustainable? ? Hashtag tweet bag, hashtag pain bag. Matt, I made the joke on Twitter today that basically BYU is in on every guy in the transfer portal.
You know what? Pretty soon here, I heard that they're talking about they're going to start calling it the BYU portal.
That's clever.
It's very funny.
McClung, I'm both fascinated and worried about his potential.
Yep.
Who's the new guy today? Whatever, I can't keep track of them all. But we'll see. I mean, here's the thing. This is the Pope effect, right? These guys want to go play for Pope.
Yes.
And quite frankly, I don't know if we've ever had a draw like that. Not that Dave Rose and other BYU coaches, Steve Cleveland and others, weren't very good coaches. I just don't know that we've ever had – I don't think anybody's ever been a hot commodity like this from a player's perspective. Forget about other schools trying to hire him. People tried to do that with Rose, right? But Pope, if they have another really good season, like, it's just going to be a destination. My question is, can he keep it from becoming – an honor code problem. So they want to come play for him. Got it. Are they going to be willing to live the honor code and not end up getting kicked off the team?
Well, and when you talk about, is this sustainable? I think that's one of the big questions, right?
Yeah.
I think that these guys feel good about getting into the culture of the basketball program. But can BYU be a good fit? And we've talked about this before, right? It's not a good fit for everybody. And for some people, this works out real well. And whether or not the sustainable really comes down to how the level of success the first couple of batches of these grad transfers have, or other transfers have as they come through the program. If it works out for these guys, right? Say so, Harms, who was having a tough stretch at Purdue, comes to Provo and really tears it up. And puts himself in a position to go to the league from a better spot than he would have been coming out of West Lafayette, then yeah, it's a lot easier to continue to sell this. So it you know, success breeds success here. And so I think that if for a couple of years you do this and you're kind of the hot place for people to go to, but if it doesn't turn into wins and opportunities for people to play at the next level, I think eventually this fizzles out.
Well, take McClung, for example. We'll see who where he decides, unless he's decided since I was last on the internet. He, you know, he comes from the Big East, right? Say he comes and he transfers and he plays for BYU. They have a great season. And he walks out of here and says, hey, the honor code's kind of weird, but it was a lot of fun to play there and BYU was kind of cool and the fans are great. That will, I think, you know, Harms is a little different because he's not from the U.S. and he's a little different of a guy anyway. I think somebody like McClung, it becomes like, oh, McClung went there and liked it? Huh, maybe I could do that, right? Because BYU is a school that a lot of people just, from a recruiting standpoint, and this is true in football and basketball, they just don't even, wouldn't even ever consider. Because it's, you know, it's a little weird compared to going to a state school. Or even some other private religious institutions that just don't have the same, maybe in-your-face religiousness of their.
Well, like Georgetown, which is a small private religious institution.
Yep. Yeah, but they don't. Okay, I have friends go to Georgetown.
It's,
out of high
school. The same. It's I'm with you. It's not the same. It's not the same thing.
So anyway, all right, it'll be interesting. Matt, I did not put this one. This just came in like a half hour ago. Since you and I. Not since we started recording, but since you and I started chatting. And so we've got another basketball-related one that is jazz-related.
Oh, bring it on.
We're part a jazz podcast now. Is from Ericker, that's at Ericker Eric on Twitter. Am I trolling jazz fans when I tweet about Jerry Sloan's number 4 being retired by the Bulls and Jerry being the original Mr. Bull and the Bulls logo based on his face and him being from Illinois? Or am I just a good Bulls fan? Just a good Bulls fan, right?
I feel like you could have stopped after like the first two things.
But he is. From
but when you
he's a farm yeah,
but
kid
when you get
Illinois.
Into when you get into the Bulls logo is modeled after his face. I feel like now we're just making stuff up.
Well, it could have been. Kind of looks like his face.
It's not modeled after like the rest. The rest of this, like that's legit. The first couple things, like yeah, you're kind of trolling, but you're not wrong. But when it goes, you're like, okay, now you're just trying to get crazy tweets.
So
that's
maybe
all you're trying to do now.
Maybe it comes down to this: he's both being a good fan and trolling them. That's possible, right? You can do both of those things. They're not mutually exclusive.
I guess I can't really disagree with that.
And by the way, condolences to Jerry Sloan's family. And man, what I loved him as a coach.
Oh, he's an icon, right? He's an icon.
You know, tough, but like not a jerk, right? And just, I mean, I said this and I believe it to this day. I think he was a better coach than Phil Jackson. And nothing against nothing against Stockton and Malone. I think Sloan would have done just all right if he had had Jordan and Kobe and Shaq.
Yeah, clearly one of the best coaches ever in the NBA.
Appears
to be universally beloved by guys that played for him.
Yeah.
You know, he's an iconic figure.
Yeah, and you watch those highlights of him as a player. He was one tough dude.
Yeah.
In an era that was much more physical than the NBA is today. So.
Yep.
All right. Let's go to BYU football since we are a BYU podcast. Justin Whiting, that's at Jan Whiting on Twitter, had this to say. If you could have a BYU football tourney with teams playing each other today, what team would win? The catch is that they are all the age they are today. So the 1984 team are all in their late 50s. Players from Matt's 96 team are now in their 40s. Who would be the champion? The current team, right? Or maybe you could pick a team from a couple years ago and put Jamal and Taysom, but that's who wins, right?
So I think who wins here is the 2015 team, right? I think if you go any further than 5 or 6 years back, like you're cooked.
No, you're going to have a bunch of people that are way out of shape. Right?
And anybody,
the 96 team. Shark looks pretty good, but.
But, you know, I think that I think you've got enough talent on that 2015 team. That's probably the one I go with.
Yeah. The 84 team. I mean, the guys in their 50s. Kozlowski's the only one that's going to.
Can you imagine, like, Robbie Bosco trying to drop back and throw a pass right now?
Well, I think he could drop back and throw a pass. I think the problem would be the distance of the pass and what happens when he gets hit.
His knees, like, there's no way.
I mean,
he'd be wearing splints. Like he was wearing splints at the end of his career when he was in college.
Yeah.
I mean, so I just think, you know, and a lot of these, you know, you look at some of these guys that came through that were just awesome. Right. And, you know, but this, it takes a toll, especially these, you know, any of these teams that had a lot of guys that went to the league and played for any extended period of time.
Oh yeah.
They're not ready to go out and slap the pads on right now.
Oh no. Heck no. Even if they've stayed in great shape. It's a different deal. Next question
what if you did it like Thanksgiving Turkey Bowl style? Does that change it?
No. Let's say you do it touch or flag football. Okay. So take out some of the physicality of it. Who before 2015 is catching Taysom?
Nobody.
All you have to do is give him any blocking or shield whatsoever, and he's to the house every freaking time. Okay? And can you imagine, say it's like a 7-on-7? Like, Taysom Hill is going to be everywhere. He's going to be intercepting passes, like throwing it, catching it. I mean, and that 2015 team, who else was on there? Was Van Noy still? Van Noy ran? No.
He was already
in the league. Been gone, man. So you might. I mean, you're going to have a couple of guys like Van Noy on a team if you did a couple years before that. So if you did like a 7-player flag football tournament, that one gets a little more interesting because you don't need as many players and they don't have to. It's still not the 84 team, by the way, right? Unless you enjoy watching people blow out their knees and grab at their backs every few
minutes.
Yeah,
this is the reason I don't do turkey bowls, right? Everybody at church wants to do the football game Thanksgiving morning. I'm not doing it.
I'm not making fun of these people, right? That would be me too, right? Okay. Interesting question, Justin. Thank you. Different. John Brame sent us a question. That's at Johnny Dangerman on Twitter. Says, if college football turns to a COVID-modified season model with only conference games, what should BYU do to their football season? Notre Dame will likely be able to keep their 6 ACC games. Will we play Liberty and UMass 3 times each? Okay, I'm going to throw something out. You agree or disagree with these statements I'm going to make? We'll make it into a game, okay? Agree or disagree, they will not just have a conference-only schedule.
Agree.
Okay. Agree or disagree. If they did have a conference-only schedule, Notre Dame is not getting any ACC games.
I actually agree with that.
If they're going to do a conference schedule, Notre Dame's host, just like we are, and will, quite frankly, would probably end up playing each other. Could be the only good thing. Lastly, if BYU has no chance to play anybody from a conference, that is the worst possible scenario for BYU football.
Yes.
I don't know what you do. That being said, it's very clear, if you're reading the tea leaves right now, college football is going to try to put on real football this year and as little disruption as they can to their schedule. I mean, that's how it's sounding. That all now that they've got a little bit of a runway and they can come at this thing without it being surprised like they were in college basketball season with all the spring sports, they're going to come at this with a plan. Whether they can execute all that plan, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, who knows, right? It's called unprecedented for a reason.
Well, right. This stuff changes every day. But there is so much at stake for some of these schools and conferences that they're going to figure something out.
There's a chance. I mean, I read an article today Matt Brown, when he was on the show several weeks ago, brought UConn up. There's a chance UConn has to shut down. If they don't play football this fall, there's a chance they shut down their sports.
Yeah.
If maybe for a year, but maybe they get out of the collegiate sports business. They're in a major conference, right, for other sports, right? Not football, but you know what I mean? Like, this isn't Wyoming State. I know that's not a thing, but you know what I mean. This is a team with a college sports tradition that, quite frankly, probably screwed their whole athletic programs by getting a Division I football team anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting the way that has all played out for them, right?
Yeah, for sure. But to your point, John, I don't think that's what's the likely scenario to happen. I think that boat was a... I don't think that was ever actually more than an idea people threw out. And the problem with these type of situations is that in a time like this, people are going to throw out a lot of ideas, right? And the press, hungry for news for sports, us fans, hungry to talk about something, get an idea that might have just been a passing idea, and we start going, oh my gosh, what if that's real? I don't believe that was ever real, because I don't think... I think a bunch of schools raised their hands and said, we make a lot of money with these other games, right? You know what I mean? Like the kickoff games and this other thing. I mean, we make a lot of money with those. So actually, no, that doesn't work for us, right? And can you imagine, with those Notre Dame rivalries, USC is not going to play Notre Dame. Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, come on. If they have a football season, they're going to play some of these games. All right.
But can you imagine a season where our schedule is Army, Liberty, New Mexico State, Notre Dame, UConn, and UMass?
I can. But it basically, it's like a conference. Hmm. And not a great one. A little top heavy.
And Notre Dame's not going to do that.
No.
There's no way that happened, to your point.
No. The Notre Dame has clout. The ACC has clout. I mean, the Pac-12 just announced, and their headquartered, like half their schools are in a state that said that they're not even going to have classes in the fall. They've announced that athletes can be back on campus in a couple of weeks. Right? So, I mean, everybody's chasing the money, which was inevitable, right? They're chasing the money. And I think most of them are going to try to do it in a way that protects the health of fans and athletes. Now, whether they will do that effectively or not, I have no idea. But I think that's what they're going to try to do.
Right.
All right. Last tweet bag question comes from Zachary Thornton. That's at Coronado Zach. See, that's not his name reversed. His name
could
is
be a
not
middle name.
Zach Coronado.
Could be a middle name.
It's not maiden name. His middle name is not Coronado, and his maiden name is not Coronado. All right.
Might be. You don't know that.
I do
Thornton
know that.
Could be his married name. You don't
I
know.
I do know that. He's been a friend of the podcast for like 7 years.
Maybe he's been married for 9.
Yeah, shut up. All right. What's the best hype we can propagate for the season? Go Cougs. So what kind of hype machine you got going for BYU football there, buddy? You got the train? You got the hype train going?
Choo-choo. For the football season? I think it's I don't know what it is.
Okay.
I watched a video last night that somebody put together and put out on Twitter that got me pretty amped up. But in terms of storyline, geez.
Okay. Well,
where is it? Where's the hype?
Okay. I'll give you some candidates. Okay. And you tell me 0 to Detmer, on a scale of 0 to Detmer, their worthiness as the hype for the 2020 BYU football season. Okay. All right. Zach Wilson breakout season.
I think you're going to have a hard time with the hype on that one.
Why? He's a post-night sleeper.
There's a whole contingent of people who aren't even sure he will be the starting quarterback.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, that's your... But it's hype, man. It's hype. Well, we'll talk about this one in a second because we're going to go through the offensive depth chart. the defense will be a top 40 defense again.
There you go. There you go. You might have something there.
Did you see that?
Players. Yeah, I could see that getting some momentum.
Did you see Pro Football Focus had us, I think it was Pro Football Focus, had us as one of the, we took one of the biggest steps back last year as a defense, which I think is no surprise to anybody.
Yes, we did.
Tuiaki's gone if he has another bad year like that, right?
I would imagine.
Yeah, I don't think he deserves to be fired. You and I talked about this a bunch after the season. I think a couple of top 40 years and then a bad year, like, that's not how you make good personnel decisions. I'm still baffled by how he ran his defense last year, though.
The tough thing with Tuiaki right now, I think, is around perception. I think people, the couple of seasons that you referenced, right, where he was putting together a top 40 defense, I believe was vastly underappreciated by BYU fandom. And so it's really easy to start piling on the guy right now. I don't anticipate that what you see in the field in 2020 is gonna turn out for end of declining defensive play. I think you see a big improvement in the fall here.
Yeah, and I hope he doesn't just rush three guys for the rest of the year. I hope he learned that probably, unless you have some disruptive guys, is probably not the way to get it done. Right. So, okay, I'll give you another one. Gunnar Romney is the next, I don't know, pick great BYU wide receiver. So say he's the next big one.
Gunnar Romney. He's the next Austin Collie.
He's the next Austin Collie. He's the next Eric Drage.
Yes.
What do you think? You're buying that one?
I'm buying that one, actually.
Okay. All right. Isaiah Kaufusi, the next great BYU linebacker. You're buying or selling that one? We've totally switched which game we're playing, by the way. So.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. What am I... What am I trying to accomplish?
Are you buying or selling Isaiah Kaufusi, next great BYU linebacker?
Buying.
Okay, buying that one. I'll probably sell it, but I think he's going to have a really good year. I think the hype.
I'm apparently really optimistic right now. Bring it on. What else you got? Bring in the hype train.
Matt Bushman, All-American.
I'm selling that.
I'm buying it.
Sorry, Matt.
You just don't like guys named Matt. It's weird.
Here's the deal. Here's going to be the problem, right? I don't know. We'll see how the season goes for Matt, but I do believe there's going to be a variety of options for the quarterback, and it's really going to come down to what kind of looks he gets.
But I think that helps him, because I think if Romney and Powell and some of these other guys emerge as legitimate pass-catching threats, and then we have... Bushman,
that's right. You got to give him more space.
He's going to be single-covered, and I think there will be a few teams... where they'll be able to cover him. They'll have a linebacker or a safety that can man him up. Most of the time, it's going to be a matchup win for us if they can do that. Now, if Romney and those guys continue to be just okay and not great, then they can provide help to whoever's covering him, and it means that he'll have fewer opportunities. Because, you know, to be a All-American tight end, You have to do one of two things. You have to play on one of the best teams in college football, or you have to put up really big numbers. You can't be a really good contributor and blocker to win All-American tight end unless you're on one of those top teams, right?
Right, right.
So he's got to put up big numbers. He's got to catch 60, 70 balls and have, you know, 1,200 yards and a bunch of TDs and some highlight plays in big wins, right? So I don't know. I think that's a possibility. Best defensive backfield BYU has ever had.
Ooh, I'm not buying that.
I'm not buying that one either, but I think they could be pretty good.
I think they're going to be better than last year as a unit.
Yeah, I think that's possible. I think they're going to be pretty good. All right. Last one. The best BYU running back played football for BYU last year.
You mean like the best of all time?
No. The best BYU running back this season is not a transfer.
Somebody who's already on the roster. Yes. I'm not buying that.
I am buying that. His name is Lapina Katoa. Just like I told you last year, he'd be the best running back we had.
You were just a year early. You were a man before his time.
That's
How's that?
That's right. So anyway, well, let's talk about the offensive depth chart because that's coming up now, and we'll finish with that. So Jay Drew, friend of the podcast, Jay Drew, several weeks ago, went through the offensive depth chart, and we're going to go through what he went through because that sounds fascinating. So he has Zach Wilson getting the nod with Jaren Hall as the backup and Baylor Romney third. Is that the order you have it today?
Yeah, but I think it's close between Hall and Romney. How's that?
I think it's close between all three of them.
I do think they'll treat it as Zach's job to lose.
Are you buying the hype that he's in the greatest shape and he's been working out and doing all that stuff?
No, everybody is like that every year. I mean,
yeah.
I just, if you're going to say that about your star player, that's going to get out about.
Well,
them
it's
every
not
year.
Just
nobody's going to be
player,
like,
though, right? People he's trained with, other observers who've seen him work this offseason, and he obviously, without having shoulder surgery, is going to come into this season better prepared than he did last year. That's just physically likely, right?
Right. He got to be right.
Right. Jaren Hall, I have no idea. Like, the first, if he has another concussion, I don't know that they've ever put him out there again, even if he
I wasn't
to.
Sure he'd even play.
Yeah, you have expressed many times you thought he wouldn't, that he would be done. Right? And he was playing baseball before they shut down baseball and playing pretty well. The dark horse for me here is Romney because I'm not sure. And again, small sample sizes, smaller, I should say, with Romney and Hall. I'm not sure Romney didn't play the best quarterback last year, right? Like,
yeah, everybody wants to make the like, what was the competition comparison right there? But he looked pretty good.
And who is this guy, right? Like, he was nobody. I just think, you know, and that's not true, right? But I mean, Jaren Hall obviously has some gifts running the football that the other two may not. But Romney had the best stats last year, right? Again, he threw 85 passes. Wilson threw 319. So it's a little unfair, and Romney obviously had some, you know, maybe not the toughest opponents that we had last year. But, you know, I just look at Romney and I say he made really good decisions. He was a better decision maker over his short period of time manning the offense than either of the other two were. And in the offense that Grimes is running, I'm not so sure that's not the best attribute that they could have if they can be accurate and throw the ball, you know, throw the ball a little bit further up. But I think Jay Drew's right. I think this is the order going into camp, and probably the order on game one.
Yep.
All right. So next is running back. So he's got Lapina Katoa as the number one, but he thinks Devontae Henry Cole, DHC, as I believe some people call him, the transfer, will quickly challenge him for carries, but learning the offense, especially with spring ball and everything cut short, and we don't know exactly what's going to happen with the fall, that Devontae Henry Cole may not have a chance to learn all the plays and all that. Matt, who do you think at the end of the year has the most carries?
Henry Cole.
I think it's Katoa.
Yeah,
isn't Tyson Williams, man.
Oh, he's not Tyson Williams. I'm all in on that. I absolutely agree with that. Tyson Williams coming in was, I mean, you knew this guy was a specimen who just, you know, barring some injury and a couple other things, had just not had a good, things had just not lined up for him, right?
Yep.
This is not that. I understand that. And I'm not here to say that I think Henry Cole is somebody that with a healthy season could have one of the best running back seasons of all time. And I think those are the types of things I was saying about Tyson. Do I think he is the do I think he's the best running back on the roster right now? Yes, I do.
Yeah,
it's really going to come down to whether or not he can learn. I think this point about him learning the offense is fair. You know, reps, even in practice, are extremely important in preparing for a season, and he may struggle for that reason.
Okay, fair enough. I disagree. I think Kanto is the best running back, but we'll see. I thought the same thing last year, and I was wrong. Tyson was the best running back on the roster. Wide receiver, he's got Gunnar Romney, Dax Milne, and Neil Powell as the three. I think that's, quite frankly, the easiest call on this depth chart. I think those are the top three.
Yeah, what is there to even talk about there other than that, right?
Yeah, and quite frankly, after going through this exercise and kind of going on the roster and looking at what Jay wrote and kind of juggling things around, I am worried about this unit. Not about the quality of those three guys, because I'm much higher on Milne than I used to be. I'm higher on Paulu than I used to be, and I've always been a big fan of Gunnar Romney's potential. I'm worried about what happens if inevitably one of those guys is going to miss some time this year. And I just don't have great faith that we've got a lot of depth at wide receiver.
What I think is interesting is I looked at this and I thought to myself, if I look at the receivers who are on the roster right now, when all is said and done, which of these guys is going to have the best career at BYU?
Romney.
I think Romney or Epps.
Yeah, Epps could be it. Yeah.
And Epps doesn't even show up in the two deep here that Jay is proposing, right? But I think if you read the article, I mean, you know, he's kind of got those new guys that, you know, these basically freshmen, this group of freshmen, all kind of, they're all fairly even, right? And you just got a little bit more information on a couple of them than you do on Epps. But I think you're right. It's either it's Romney or Epps, in my opinion. But Romney, I mean, right now, just among that group, I mean, he's clearly the top dog.
I mean, this is his year to step up and fulfill the potential that, you know, as a, you know, heavily recruited guy, very talented guy. He's had injuries, had some inconsistency, also had some good players playing in front of him, right? Getting more of the opportunities. This is his year, right? And hopefully he's healthy and he can hit the year running and can put up some big numbers. Actually, tight end's the easiest one. It's Bushman, and you got Isaac Rex behind him. Not much interesting to say there, probably. O-line is interesting because he says the only two that are written in ink, if you will, on the depth chart are Brady Christensen at left tackle and James Empey at center. And obviously Empey is getting a lot of press because he's viewed by Pro Football Focus and others as one of the best linemen in the country. Maybe the best center in college football coming into the year, or at least one of the best. And then there's been all this stuff the last couple of days about BYU not putting an offensive lineman into the league lately. And why is that? Because they used to put them in, blah, 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 blah. As if the goal of college football as fans is to produce NFL prospects, right? In the end, we've had a dearth. The reason is, Criddle put it out there, we haven't had as good offensive lines as we had before, right? We just didn't have the guys. You know, with all due respect to a few of them that were quite good and have had a sniff at the NFL, that's why. I mean, there's no secret sauce here. Do you think it's coaching, or do you think we just didn't have the players? I mean, there's an element of both.
I think there's a couple of pieces to it. You know, some of it also, if you go back during that stretch of time that we're referencing here, I mean, there was several changes in offensive philosophy that impacted the types of players that you were recruiting to play at the offensive line and the type of things you did with your offensive line that I think impacts your ability to develop talent over a long period of time at that position.
Sure.
So I think things like that have led to some of that inconsistency. So I just think there's a lot to that.
Yeah.
I just think there's a lot to that.
I mean, we went for fast and then we went for big and I don't know. Like you said, there's over the past decade and a half, there's been some changes in philosophy that have probably also played a part in this.
But you know what? A story on the offensive line that I just still love is Blake Freeland.
Yeah,
you know, if you go back in time to when Blake Freeland was being recruited, he was recruited as a 6'8", 260-pound athlete. Right? This is a guy that played quarterback, tight end, fullback, and defensive line in high school, was on the basketball team, threw the javelin, you know, did all sorts of stuff. This guy was an athlete that we turned into an offensive lineman. He had never played offensive line until he did so as a freshman for us last year. And here he is ready to lock down the right tackle spot as a sophomore after having put on about 40 pounds. You know, this guy is a real talent. And I think that if you look at opportunities to develop talent and take a guy and make him, you know, maybe league ready, I really like Blake Freeland for that. Now he's going to get challenged this year. Absolutely. For sure. I think Shannon Herring is no slouch, but, I really am excited. Freeland is a guy that I'm just really excited about.
Well, and the thing is, like, outside of Christensen and Empey, assuming they're both healthy all year, I think you'll see a lot of these guys on the 2-deep play, because that's just something we've done is rotate, right? And it's an offensive line. There will be injuries, right? I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
So you're going to need Shandon Herring. You're going to need Drew has at right guard Tristan Hodge instead of Sale Apaga, right? Both of those guys are going to play, right? So I don't think there's, you know, I think all 10 guys listed here end up having more than just garbage time, right? They'll all play meaningful snaps at some point during the year, either through rotation or because of injury.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be excited about on the offensive line right now. I think you've got a young coach in there who's got a lot of energy and is trying to do some new things. I think that if you look at people who pay attention to this stuff nationally, they were very impressed with this unit a year ago. I think that there's a lot to be excited about with the offensive line.
Well, I think it'll be the strength of that offense. I mean, I think your strength is the offensive line at Bushman. And can the offensive coaching staff leverage that into a better than average offense with position players that may not be outside of Bushman, you know, All-American type of players? And I mean no disrespect to Zach Wilson or the wide receivers or this running back group. I just don't think we have, with the exception of Romney's potential here, but he hasn't played up to it yet. I don't think we have anybody that defenses are going to be worried about on the position skill group except for Bushman. But if you have a really good offensive line, that may not matter, right? You may be able to create holes for running backs, protect the quarterback long enough that you can create a really good offense out of a position player group that maybe isn't as spectacular as you'd hope.
You just need them to be good enough. And part of making them good enough is giving them time, opening up holes.
Well, I mean, you can't do a run thing without an offensive
line. Basic blocking stuff, right? Right,
right.
Exactly.
I mean, Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith, pick your great running backs in the NFL or pick your BYU running backs. Luke Staley, you know, I don't know, pick... Why can't I think of another great BYU running back?
I don't know. Jamal Williams.
You know, Harvey Unga. I mean, they all played behind really good offensive lines, right?
Yep.
And that's why they were able to put up the kind of numbers they did in college. So, well, Matt, that's all we got for this week's show. We'll be back next week for our first show in June. I don't know why that's exciting, but it is super exciting. You know, June is the best month, really.
Oh, geez.
It's when all the best people are born.
Oh, barf.
That's just a fact. I don't know if you knew that. It's a fact.
I didn't know that. I appreciate you sharing that with me. Yeah. That's great.
You're great. It's great. Anyway, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.